Senator Huggins, Senator Davis, and myself, Stevens. We're here to talk about a bill that has been introduced. It's Senate Bill 290. And we have somebody from Senator Hoffman's staff to introduce it to us. Please come forward, identify yourself if you would. Good morning.
Good morning, committee. For the record, my name is John Wise. I'm on staff to Senator Hoffman, and I'll be presenting the bill this morning. You should have in your packets the sponsor statement. And I'm sure a copy of the bill. Sectional summary by legal. And a report by Department of Education and Early Development on the funding for the last 29 years, starting in 1980. And mostly this morning, I'm prepared to speak off of this page, which is a summary page of the Department of Education 29-year report on grant and bond funding for schools. Does everyone have this?
It's in the back, I think, on your left-hand side of your packet.
Well, first, what's the preference? Do you want me to go through the wording in the bill?
First, I'd like you to present what the bill does and why it's more equitable than the present system.
Okay. As we stated in the sponsor statement, basically schools in the state
are... And Senator Olson is with us, too.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Sorry, John, go ahead.
Schools are funded basically by two methods in the state. Districts that are in the unorganized areas receive 100% grant funding, and districts in the organized areas go out to their voters for bonding, and if approved by their voters, then they come to the state of Alaska, and under current statute, they're approved for either 70% reimbursement if they follow state guidelines. If the districts choose not to follow state guidelines, they can go for 60% reimbursement. And basically, the argument that we're presenting in Senate Bill 290 is that the districts with wealth are receiving more funding percentage-wise from the state, and basically that's an unfair and inequitable solution to how state funds should be distributed to all of the people of Alaska. The wording in the bill is to remove reference to that process, and rather than call it grant, basically what we've done is call it a fund. And we ask that all of the schools be placed on need priority basis by the Department of Education and Early Development and funded in that order. So for example, if there were two schools, let's say in the state, one was a grant funded and one was bond funded, and the grant funded school was ranked number two by the Department of Education and the bond funded was ranked number one, that community, if they went out to bond, then yes, they would be funded because they were ranked number one. However, if the situation were reversed, where the bond funded school was number two and the grant funded school was number one and the bonding school went out, then what we're intending in Senate Bill 290 is that the bond-funded school could not receive state funds ahead of the grant-funded school. They could not step over in line. Any questions?
So you're going to show us then where there's been an unfairness to students and how it balances out, taking out the percentage paid for by boroughs or local communities, that you can show us that there's been less funding that have gone to students in unorganized areas compared to organized?
That's correct.
Okay. Please go ahead.
Okay. If you look at this chart that really summarizes all of the Department of Education's listing of the grant and bond funding, starting with 1980 at the top of the list going down to 2008. If you look over on the right-hand side, you'll see that, kind of almost in, not quite in the middle of the page, is the annual organized percent. These are percentages, percent of funding received by the organized areas for that year. So in 1980, the organized areas received 100% of the funding. And then over at the extreme right of the page, the unorganized percent, of course, if the organized received all of the funding, then the unorganized received 0% that year.
So you're saying in 1980, of all the schools funded, 100% went to organized?
That's correct. So you can go down the list and see what's happened there. At the bottom, you have the average percent. So over 29 years, the average has been 75% of the funding has gone to the organized areas, and 25% has gone to the unorganized areas.
And that's based on not per student, but dollar amount.
Just the dollars.
Yeah.
Just the dollars.
Can you translate that into per student? Have you done that?
No, I haven't.
Yeah. Isn't that the point, though? We want to show that it's unfair. It'd be nice to know that percentage at some point.
I think clearly it's unfair for unorganized areas to receive 0% funding in any year. In five of those 29 years, they received 0% funding.
Could you say that again?
In five of the 29 years, the unorganized areas received 0% of the funding.
So 24 of the years they did receive funding. Same, would be the same thing. Okay, just to make sure.
That's correct, mm-hmm. Senator. And in seven additional years, they received less than 7% or less of the funding. So in 12 of the 29 years, or 41% of the time, they received less than 7% of the funding. 40% of the time. The recommendation for funding in a report, school capital project funding under HB 203, a report to the legislature by DEED, they recommend in the recommendations, it says, limits on the amount of school debt reimbursement should be applied with consideration of an appropriate ratio of 30% to 40% of the total funding being provided.
Sorry, John, would you tell me now where you are?
I'm just referring to a report that I don't think you have, but
okay.
Putting into the record that the Department of Ed has looked at this issue, and they have recommended that unorganized areas should receive 30% to 40% of the funding. That's their recommendation. And they also noted in the report that over the last 10 years that unorganized areas received about 35% of the funding over the last 10 years. So from the department's perspective, I'm sure they see improvement in what's happened in the past. However, especially with the 0% funding, 5 years out of the 29 years, I think HB 290 is needed, so that never happens again.
I'm sorry, would you run through that again? The 30% and then the 35%, and then whether you disagree with the findings. Would you run through again the department's comment there on 30% and 35%?
Basically, the department said that they agree that the funding going to unorganized areas should be between 30% to 40%.
Okay.
The average in the last 10 years has been about 35%. So the department believes that the situation today has corrected itself. However, roughly 30 years, unorganized areas receiving no funding at all. There is no basis that I can think of, why unorganized areas, especially if their schools are, have more need than the schools in the organized areas, considering life safety issues.
So are you agreeing with that 35% as a good average, or are you disagreeing with that?
My own personal opinion is that there should be one list. And the
No, I'm talking about the 35%. If the average has been 35% in the last 30 years, is that wrong? Is that unfair, unequitable?
The 35% in the last 10 years is better than zero. It may be inequitable if the schools that are in most need of being funded are not being funded.
Yeah, I think Senator Huggins.
John, I'm looking at your right column, and it's the annual unorganized percentile. And there are multiple years here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. There's 9 years there where there's significant spending. One is 60%, one is 73%, another is 50%, 52%. And not how many of them there are, but there must be some reason why the percentage jumped dramatically. Did you look at that? I mean, I have no idea what, it's the numbers you put together. What caused those years to be an aberration based on what you're describing?
Senator Huggins, to the chair, I can only guess that perhaps that those are the years where the legislature did consider need and funded them on need. But I really don't know.
Yeah, because, I mean, quite frankly, if you look since 2005, the percentages are dramatically higher, 48, 36, 70, and then 25%.
Again, Senator,
I don't know, just looking at it trend-wise over the last 4 years, the trend's pretty positive. I mean, that may not be a good conclusion. I don't have the in-depth knowledge you do of your chart.
Again, Senator, I would agree that the trend is positive. However, the problem still exists because, in our view, knowing that the legislature funded unorganized areas at 0% for at least 5 years and below 7% for 7 additional years, the problem could come back. And we're asking for protection through Senate Bill 290 that schools in the unorganized areas receive consideration.
Mr. Chairman, on that point.
Senator Olson.
As I remember the situation, I think that what happened was that the number of schools that were topping the list were, a heavy percentage of those that were within the first 5 as well as within the first 10 were from unorganized areas, so there's no way to go ahead and avoid the fact that the neediest schools were out there, and that's why those numbers that were reflective in the latter part in the years you're talking about were because of, and I wasn't here back in the 90s, but because of that, if you look from 1994 on, there were some significant 0, 4, 7, 7, 7, and because of that, the unorganized areas had more schools at the top of their list, and that's why within the last 5 years they've started to catch up. Now, certainly the trend is positive, but I think the sponsor's goal is to make sure that there is some equitable protection out there.
I'm not sure I wasn't here either, but if we take the downturn in the economy, it may have some significant reason why this is as it is, or it may have nothing to do with it. But as I remember listening to some people describe how there wasn't any money to spend, whether that has a bearing on this or not, I have no idea.
If I could respond?
Yes, please, John.
Senator Huggins, through the chair, there's always been money to spend. If you look down the column of the organized areas, they've always received funding. So the state has always had funding. The issue that we're bringing up in Senate Bill 290 is that the needs of unorganized Alaska should not be overlooked.
Thank you, Mr. Wise. Okay, any other questions, Mr. Wise, at this point? Did you have a further pit? Yes, Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When was the recommendation put out by the department to go ahead and, they thought that the equitable funding would be 30% to 40% for the unorganized areas per year? When was that report given out?
Senator Olson, through the chair, that report was dated February 1, 2006.
Oh, that's just recent.
That's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, so that was their recommendation, and then at that point, they had said the average was 35%, or that was their goal. They actually said the funding was 30% to 40%, but what you read to us, you said the average actually was 35%. Is that true? In the last
10 years, yeah. The average has been around 35%, and the department believed that was fair.
Right. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Weiss.
However, we maintain in our bill that fairness is everybody being placed on a priority list and being funded by need.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Thank you. Mr. Weiss, can you just tell me, or do you have an idea on how many times schools that were bonded versus schools that were granted were overstepped or were placed in front of those unorganized areas?
Senator Olson, to the chair, I don't have the exact, but whenever you see a 0%, the five times, they were stepped over. If you see under 7%, they were stepped over. If the department believes that an average is in the 30% to 40% range, every time you see under that percent, they were stepped over. It could be that if schools were funded on need, perhaps unorganized areas would be above 50%. If you look at the, there were only 10, if the department believes that the average is between 30% and 40%, that only happened 10 times in the last 30 years. One-third of the time, unorganized schools were funded according to what the department feels is fair.
Thank you. Senator Wilson.
Thank you. A couple things. Mr. Weiss, when you say they were stepped over, he asked you for an example. You gave your opinion. Do you have any examples of where they were stepped over? Because I don't think that's true. You could think that they were stepped over, okay, and assert that, but I don't think that there's proof to show that, because we hold those lists pretty in high esteem, and we all watch to make sure that that doesn't happen. Now, sometimes organized Alaska gets stepped over for whatever reason by unorganized Alaska, and I've seen it happen here, and I've seen it happen here in the last few years. So unless there's some proof or there's some discussion or record that people took advantage of the list, I would just hope, Mr. Chairman, that we don't allow that to just lay on the record as unchallenged. It's your opinion. I appreciate that. That's why you're here. And I would hope too, Mr. Chairman, I'm not here to atone for the sins of the people that were here 30 years ago. I think just to keep us on track here, I'm not interested in what's happened over the last 30 years. I'm interested in what's happened over perhaps the last 10 years. And the legislature has responded. Back in the late 90s, the Casile case was filed, and you can see there in the far right column that there were some folks that thought that unorganized Alaska was being taken advantage of. And the Casile case was filed and had to do with the school trust, and it had to do with the legislature.
And what year was that, Senator?
Well, the report came back, I want to say, in 01, somewhere in there, 02. But plus or minus right in there.
Mm-hmm.
So the judge's decision came back. It was under Governor Knowles, I remember that, so before 92. Judge's decision came back, preliminary decision, and he set the case on hold. He stayed the case to find out what the legislature was going to do. When we looked at that in the early 2000, we found that the Attorney General handed the judge the years 97, 98, 99. He handed the judge the three worst years. And summarily, he had his hat handed to him and was moved out of the AG's office, but the record stayed. And but the effect of that case lingered. And I think you can see, John, the effect of the case that we did focus on unorganized Alaska. And we have spent hundreds of millions of dollars in the last 10 years. we have aligned ourselves with what the department appears to think is an appropriate and fair level. And so I'm not sure that it's time to pull out the fire hose, because I don't think there's a problem here. But I just want to make sure we remember a little bit of history, and that this, and that people haven't been abused and stepped over, that the legislature has responded to the needs of unorganized Alaska in spite of their have responded to the needs of unorganized Alaska, and I want to make sure that's part of the record.
Mr. Chairman, if you're done, Senator Wilkin, I'll...
I'd like to follow up on that issue, unless you're on the same subject.
I just want to say that Tony Knowles actually came in 94 and was here till 2002.
And I believe Kasihly case was before Governor Knowles left office.
Before 2002.
Because he didn't take it to appeal. So it was 01 or 02 that the case came back from the judge, and the judge stayed it pending legislative action.
I'm sorry, I thought you said 92.
Senator Olson.
I thought you said 92, so I was...
No, 02. I'm sorry, I might have 02.
Okay. Further comments on this subject?
Yes,
Senator Huggins.
Like I said, this is the first time I've ever seen this list, but that may explain the trend line being positive when you look at it. I mean, if you look at the near-term figures, it gives you a lot more comfort than maybe in some of the out years.
Before we leave this, Mr. Weiss, can you respond to Senator Wilkins' comments on stepped over either way? And first, would you define stepped over? What would you mean by that? And then can you give us some specifics, as Senator Wilkin asked?
I don't have the exact lists with me, but it's my understanding that the schools that are placed on a priority list are mostly the schools in the unorganized areas. Organized area schools really don't have a list. Once they just go out for bonding, and once they get voter approval, they come to the state of Alaska, and the state of Alaska funds them today at either 70% or 60%. And in fact, by what's happening, and it's also in this report from the Department of Ed, is that a lot of the districts with wealth are choosing to bypass state guidelines and be reimbursed at 60% rather than the 70%. So the districts with wealth are using their wealth to get more schools.
Well, thank you. I think I understand what you're saying, but there's also some unfairness there too, because my district has often voted down bonds, and so we're left with an inadequate school system, an inadequate high school that, it, by anybody's standards, should needs considerable work to it. So, I guess you need to also take that into account, that local communities may say we're not rich enough to pay for it, and you're not going to have it.
Our contention in Senate Bill 290 is that everyone should be on a list, and when your community chooses to bond, it should only be funded if the need is established by the Department of Ed.
Senator Harris?
Yeah, I mean, I feel very uncomfortable with the rural-urban conversation, but I mean, that's where we are in this. But I got to tell you, and I will side with Senator Stevens on the piece, my neighbors are in mutiny over the property taxes they're being asked to pay to do bonding, and they voted down bonds. So I don't know, I wouldn't classify my neighbors as wealthy, but I can tell you those people that are having to vote for new schools, a number of the bonds are not succeeding. So, you know, it's not a clear path just because potentially you might have the money you're organized that you can be able to build schools. So just for clarification.
And another issue that maybe Senator Wilkins can bring it up, but is the...
Before we go on that, Mr. Chairman.
Well, let me finish my sentence and then you can. It's a concern about areas that have neglected becoming organized, that could afford to be organized, and have chosen not to be organized because they would have to pay for the schools. And I know there are community, having been chair of Community and Regional Affairs, we studied the various areas in the state that... that could support their schools but chose not to. And so they're not doing that. They're not stepping up to the plate like many responsible citizens are who are paying property tax to build their schools. And so there's an unfairness there. I know Senator Wilkin has been a drum he's beaten several times, but it's still an issue that is important that we need to hear. I think Senator Wilkin had his hand up first and then Senator Olson, is that correct?
Yeah, I believe so. And it isn't an urban-rural thing at all, and this wealth thing is vapor also. And I'm looking here in this report that I want to talk about in a minute, but the people of St. Mary's and the people of Tanana, the two that come to my mind, there's others on the left side, if you take assessed value and divide it by their students, there are those are organized areas, and there are areas in this state far more wealthy than those folks. And so, and they're not paying a nickel for their schools. And when you ask them to pay a nickel, they scream bloody murder. But there are people in organized Alaska that aren't wealthy at all that struggle and give a local contribution, give their four mills. The disconnect here is that if we did this, we are prioritizing those that have the capacity to help with their schools but refuse to accept that responsibility over those that have the capacity to help with their schools and accept that responsibility through Organized Alaska. Now, John, I'd refer you to this report that was done in 2003. It's an excellent report. Got poo-pooed because there was a lot of controversy in it, and people didn't want to step up to the plate. But here's four areas of our state that have far more capacity than some of the folks that are helping with their schools today, yet refuse to do so. I had 23 votes in the House to move to implement this, and it was stopped by a guy that's now in jail. And I won't forget that. But the point of the matter is that before we start saying that this is unfair, before we start saying that it's rich versus poor, urban versus rural, what we really ought to be talking about is not funding but responsibility. If there's a gate through which you have to pass to prove that you aren't capable of accepting local government and the responsibility of schools in your area, and that puts you on some sort of a list, okay, let's talk about that. But to generally just say, well, I'm unorganized, I'm going to stay that way, and the state, you pay for my schools before the people in Fairbanks have an opportunity, and the people in Fairbanks want to pay for their schools out of their own checkbook. That's the unfairness, John, in this concept. We are not passing over the areas of the state that need schools, White Mountain. We jumped immediately when they needed a school. And we've done over the last 10 years. We've spent hundreds of millions of dollars to build schools in unorganized Alaska. It's not wealth, it's not fairness, it's not urban-rural, it's just simple responsibility. And this bill doesn't even address this, and it's where this bill should start. So, thank you.
Yeah, and a response to that, Mr. White?
Yes.
And then we'll get to you, Senator Olson.
Senator Wilkin, through the chair. The Constitution of the state of Alaska says that people may organize, so it's permissive. It does not require them to organize. I believe that's another issue from the issue of whether or not children in Alaska who have the greatest need should or should not receive a school that's funded by the state. Funded in whole or in part, we believe that it should be based on need. And in the country today, court cases are coming forward basically saying that it is inequitable to fund schools based on a formula that relies on districts' wealth. And yes, for the unorganized, it's improving. It appears that the Department of Education has found a compromise in the 30% to 40% range. However, we still believe that schools should be funded based on need and not the wealth of a district.
I can't let that lie. We just had a court case, John, and you know the Moore versus State court case that essentially gave our system a clean bill of health on how we fund our schools. So I just want to make sure that there isn't that little lingering doubt that we're not doing it by the Constitution, because as recently as within the last year, we have been we've been assessed that we are fulfilling our constitutional mandate. So, thank you. And we're not going to get into the organized, unorganized, and the Constitution and all that. That's a different committee.
Well, yes, but I do have to respond to your comment about the choice. My district had no choice. My borough had no choice. It was a mandatory borough, so we didn't want to be a borough when it occurred and fought against it, but yet we are a borough, and we're forced into it by the state. And actually, it hasn't worked out too badly. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, before we get too far astray here, I want to go ahead and respond to some of the issues that have been there. I know that Senator Wilkin and myself have seen eye to eye, and I certainly appreciate when White Mountain in my district did have a fire that burned down the school that was built in 1935, that they did respond and put up a school, and that school is obviously still being built now, and hopefully will go ahead and come into full usage here in the near future. But as we look at those situations, that's one example, and there are examples. And I have to challenge what was stated by the senator from Fairbanks, that there have been times, even within my own district, where schools that are able to bond, because I got two organized boroughs there, that have been able to go ahead and get their schools ahead of the list that was on the construction list. And so to say that has never happened or hasn't happened, I can certainly bring up the numbers that were there within my own district. To get back to your comment, and the issue of mandatory boroughs and people have choosing not to be boroughized. And one of the reasons that they've chosen not to become a borough is because if they did become a borough, they would never get any schools out there in the lower Yukon area because of the inability to go ahead and raise the 40% that's out there to match that. And we'd never see any schools that were there. So that's one of the reasons that they've decided not to go ahead and become an organized area. As far as the ability of other people that have chosen not to, I think that's part of, I wasn't part of that decision, so I can't respond for those people.
Thank you, Senator. Further comments? Anything further, John?
Just, I think, maybe you can see a glimpse into that. There is a problem with how schools are funded in the state, and it does need to be examined. I don't know what the formula needs to be, but clearly the present situation is not fair or equitable to all of the children of Alaska, and I believe the legislature needs to either take a serious look at Senate Bill 290 or something else needs to be proposed to fix the inequitable problems that are out there.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wise. Well, even though you're not on the list, Mr. Jeans, I'd appreciate your coming forward and either telling us your position or being prepared to answer some questions, if you would.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Jeans, from the outset, do you have any response you care to make at this time? Or?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Eddie Jeans. I'm the Director of School Finance. With me today is Sam Keto, who is our facilities manager. And so if the committee has questions, I'd like you to ask Sam those questions. There's a, on-the-job training kind of thing going on here. Mr. Chairman, we understand the bill sponsors' concerns. Currently, municipalities are allowed to submit grant projects, as you're probably well aware. The first two, the first project on both lists this year happened to be municipal school districts. In the report that was referred to, the department's analysis was based on grants versus debt, not unorganized versus municipality. So the 30 to 40% range was a recommendation of grant funding versus debt funding. And obviously, there's going to be some municipalities in those grant projects. Mr. Chairman, I think that if we went to a single list as proposed by this legislation, if I was sitting in a municipality and I was next on that list, There's no way I'm going to issue debt. I'm going to sit right there and wait for the state to pay for it through grants. So I think that there may be some unintended consequences here, where municipalities would no longer use that debt mechanism that's currently available to them in the current system. If the committee has specific questions, I think Sam and I are ready to answer.
On a single list, how would the timing work? Because in an organized borough, you'd have to be on the list, and then you have to go for bonding. What would be the steps of that, and would that still be workable, or would, because you had to go for bonding, would it put you in a disadvantageous position?
Mr. Chairman, as I see it, we would still have our two lists. We'd have our school construction, we'd have the major maintenance list. And as I mentioned, the first projects on both of our lists this year are municipal projects. Both of them are in the governor's budget to receive grants. I don't know if it's the intent of the sponsor that those two projects would have to go out for bonding. And so my point is I think if I was number one on the project, on the list, and even though I had bonding authority, I would sit there and wait for a grant, because you can't go down the list until you fund my project. And so why would I want to put my municipality in that position of having to issue bonds if I know I'm holding up the rest of the state until I get my grant funding? Does that make sense, Mr. Chairman?
It does. I'm trying to figure out into the voting issue, too, about going to the public for permission to do the bonds. Yes, and if you put yourself on the record, right. Mr. Keto, glad to have you here.
For the record, my name is Sam Keto III. I'm the facilities engineer for the Department of Education and Early Development. You had asked a process question. Right now, if I can start with the way it works now, a district that's applying for a bond project can submit an application at any point during the year. We review that application and we approve or deny or request additional information. If the bill is implemented, the only time the projects would need to be submitted, debt and grant, by September 1st of each year. They would need to be put on the list. The list comes out in November. It's final usually sometime around February. And then the legislature considers the grant list. During that time, I don't know that we would be able to consider authorizing bonds or authorizing bond projects. So we would need to wait until after the legislature considered the grant projects. So bond projects would then only be able to be considered over the summer or for the fall. So if a district is looking to bond for a project, they would need to be at least 12 months, probably more, ahead of that schedule in order to try and get on the list and then to get approved for bonds.
Thank you, Mr. Keto. I appreciate that. Any questions of Senator Hargis?
Yeah, I do, because I'm sitting here rolling. As I recall, the number one school is Sioux Valley. Correct me if I'm
correct.
Right. Is that
correct?
Accurate? Yeah. And I don't know what other schools go through, but just, you know, kind of go through what I think is correct. In the case of Sioux Valley, burned down, and long story short, they're working out of a senior center now with some portables, and there's the issue of whether or not there's insurance money and some other kinds of things, which means the clock on when you're going to dig first dirt is still sort of stopped, I guess, for lack of a better term, or ticking. You look at it in the other respect, but it sets atop the list, and it's in what you're saying, it's a showstopper for those below it. Is that accurate? Or
through the chair, Senator Huggins, in the proposed legislation, a project on the top of the list wouldn't stop any other projects. But if you had a project that was, say, number five on the list,
right,
grant, and project number six was eligible for debt, project number six couldn't happen until the legislature funded project number five.
Okay. Okay. Got it.
Okay. Well, Mr. Jeans, Mr. Keto, what I think I heard Mr. Wise say is that the students are treated unfairly. That when you look at the amount of money going to those students who live in an unorganized borough, it's they're not being treated fairly in comparison with students who live in organized boroughs. And I think something that's pretty close to, I believe, what he said. Can you respond to that? Is that true in your mind?
No, I can to a certain degree, but the Department of Education does not actually control the level of funding in either the grant or the debt list. So we create the priority list. Ultimately, for the debt program, it's how many communities come in and request debt. And at this point, there's no ceiling on the amount of debt. We haven't seen a significant amount more than that percentage over the last 5 years. But we don't actually have a limit on how much debt can be expended for the school construction projects. But we don't either control the amount that the legislature appropriates for the grant project.
Sure. Thank you. Senator Huggins?
Well, the other thing, Eddie, I did not look at this list. I'll admit I didn't do my homework before I came today. But it looks like the trend line is relatively positive. And if you go to 2008, 70% of the funding goes to unorganized. Now, that may be aberrational. And then 36, then 48, and 20, and then 29, 50%, 39. But help us out about the trend. Is that just a phenomena, or is there some story on the trend line? I don't know the answer to that question. I'm not.
Go ahead.
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, that is an anomaly on 2008 because we're not completely through FY 2008, so all of the bond hasn't been authorized. We have some bonds out there, some bond requests out there that haven't been approved by voters that if you add those in, then it actually brings that percentage down to about 50, and we still have 4 months left in the fiscal year. And I'm sorry, I forgot the second part of the question.
Well, and then if you go the year prior, it's 36%. The year prior to that is 48%. So, I mean, it looks like if you just take a snapshot of that area that, some of the concerns may, the newest indicator of trend would be positive if you looked at the way the bill is laid out and the premise that it's based upon.
Right. Through the chair, Senator Huggins, at my level, looking at applications coming into the department, what we've seen is a lot more pressure at the municipal level on going out for additional bond issues. So we've seen a decline in the amount of bond requests that have been coming in for projects and pressure at the local level to not spend an excessive amount of money on bonds. At the same time, then the legislature has been responding with grant projects. So it's remained at about the 35% level.
And Mr. Chairman, if I might, that's an interesting phenomenon that you point to, and I can only speak for Matsu, but I can tell you my neighbors and some that live a little further away that I wouldn't call neighbors, just acquaintances that I see at cars, the issue and the phenomena of them suppressing our ability to go out and say, I want to build another school because I want my child to go to a new school, does not exist. I mean, they are very, very sensitive to taking on bond debt. So that's an interesting phenomena of self-leveling, for lack of a better term.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could just reflect on what I think the sentiment of the bill sponsor is, that we all know that history repeats itself, and those that don't learn from history are going to make those same mistakes. And I think what we're seeing here is the trend that the pendulum has swung one way and now it's swinging the other way, and the concern it's going to swing back the other way, and we start getting into that period of time where single digit numbers from zero even down to zero over a significant period of time happen in the mid-90s, and then what we come up with later on I think are social ills of students that for one reason or another, from the some of those areas that are grant-related schools, we start to see that population engage in activities that may not be the most lawful. And I think that's one of the reasons that this sponsor of the bill put this in there, so we don't go back to those 0-0 years where none of the grant-related schools become go down to zero. And so I think that's what we're looking at here now, to try and have some type of cushion or protective measure put in there so that we don't get into the issue that we've seen in the past.
Thank you, Senator. I have to apologize. I was probably not paying attention when the Kasaili case occurred. It was before I was in the legislature, There's certainly there's the Moore case as well. Can you tell us if are we in a different place than we were prior to? Maybe a quick review of the Casale case and tell us are we in a different place than we were a few years ago on complying with court-ordered responsibilities of education. Any overall comments on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Casale case was the judge issued their decision in the late 90s, and there was two pieces to it. One was on the funding mechanisms for school construction and major maintenance in the state, and the second was dealing with the public school trust fund and was it adequately capitalized. That particular piece is still being decided right now. In fact, the Department of Law is working with the plaintiffs on trying to resolve that particular issue. Once the trust issue is resolved, I believe that the courts will issue a final decision. But based on the history, recent history of the funding, I believe that's going to influence the court's final decision. Where is that going to come out? I couldn't tell you. But the courts did find that our current system wasn't working at the time that the lawsuit was decided, that there was an inequity between the two systems. But clearly, Mr. Chairman, the legislature stepped to the table and has provided funding through the grant program for the past number of years. I think, you know, the price of oil has something to do with that, too. So in the lean years, there wasn't a whole lot of grant funding going on anywhere. But clearly, it's the legislature stepped to the table in recent years.
So do I have the right interpretation from the department that you would be uncomfortable, the department would be uncomfortable with a single list? Is that what I've been hearing you say, or is that not true?
Mr. Chairman, the department is very comfortable with our process of prioritizing projects. My concern is who's going to make the determination which projects have to be debt funded versus grant funded? And if you're going to require all projects to go onto a priority list, if I'm in a municipal school district and I'm at the top of that list, I'm going to hold out for grant funding. I wouldn't want the legislature telling me I have to go and bond for that. You're not telling them they have to do that right now. If they're at the top of the list, they get grant funding if they're a municipal school district.
Right.
And that's the part that I'm unclear and, I guess, uncomfortable with.
Thank you, Mr. Jeans. Yes, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Jeans, and maybe you're not the best person to go ahead and answer this, but the question has been brought up of the Moore case. And as we look at funding of schools, there are different categories that schools are funded. You got the major maintenance, you have school construction, you have the operating budget that's out there. There was a comment made by one of the previous speakers that the Moore case stated that there was adequate funding that was out there. Was this indeed a finding of the court? And if it was, which of those categories were they specifically talking, or were they talking about all of them? Because obviously this bill has to do only with school construction. And so I want to make sure that the people that are listening and that the understanding within the group here is that there's no misinterpretation of what the judge found in the Moore case.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, the Moore case was based on school operating expenditures. Mm-hmm. And Judge Gleason did find that the state is providing adequate funding for school districts' operations.
Which is different than school construction.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, you're correct. The construction lawsuit was the Casale lawsuit. And in the judge's initial decision, they did find an inequity in the current funding scheme of debt versus grants. But they haven't issued a final ruling on that.
And that's the point I want to make, Mr. Chairman, is that this bill here deals with school construction and not with the broad idea that under the Moore case that they were adequately funded.
Thank you, Senator Olson. All right, I want to make sure I give Peggy Lowen a chance to speak. Is there anything else that needs to come before us before we ask Mr. Keto and Mr. Jean to step back. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Figgy Lowen?
Figgy Cowan.
I'm sorry, Cowan. Cowan.
She had to leave.
Oh, she had to leave. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Her writing's as bad as mine. Must be an educator. All right, any further comments anybody cares to make at this time? Well, we will hold this bill over. It's been a fascinating discussion, one that needs to continue. And Mr. Wise, any summing up you would care to make at this time?
Thank you, Chair. The only thing I can add is, I mean, about the question of a bonded school, if they didn't vote to bond, what would happen? A solution could be that the legislature, say perhaps, would look at the list and decide to fund the first 10 schools on that list, meaning they would fund at the 70% level schools that were listed to be a bonded school. And whether that school decided to bond or not would determine whether or not state funds would be used, but it would be appropriated by the legislature for their use if they so choose.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wise. Any further comments? All right, we're adjourned.